Good time tonight. We're going to be talking to in the country, in the world, and he happens to be located in New York, which is pretty much ground zero for 9/11 as well as the 9/11 truth movement. We're going to be talking strategy. We're going to be talking about how we can take this 9/11 issue and actually do something with it, not just be complaining about it all the time, just be whining, saying, what's wrong with all you people? Why don't you wake up? But how can we actually create a strategy to win on this issue? My guest tonight is Les Jamison. He's a resident of Brooklyn, New York. He's one of the most active 9/11 truth people anywhere. He's been out there just about every Saturday afternoon at Ground Zero since January 2004. He's been out there pretty much weekly, handing out literature, talking to people, informing the crowds about the real agenda behind 9/11. Les is also managed to attend some of the 9/11 commission here, annual viewings, which each gave him an update from first who were talking of job building that lapse. The company was there, and the NIC investigation people were about why it's called, and got that firsthand view of just how bogus that whole situation was. He's written a number of articles on 9/11. Les has created a slideshow that consolidates all the information about 9/11 down to five major points, and he's given that presentation in many places. He's been involved in several large 9/11 truth events, as well as an ongoing film series at St. Mark's Church in New York on Sundays in the East Village. That's been the kind of central spot for New York 9/11 Truth. And of course, Les is a key guy at NewYork911Truth.org. Les has put all kinds of energy into national projects as well. He was a point man, one of the key guys at the Emergency Truth Convergence in Washington, D.C. in July of 2005. That was my first major 9/11 truth event, and that's where I met Les. He's currently working on a plan called the Citizens Counter Coup, which is a monthly action plan to speak truth to power, expose the true crimes of 9/11, and get something done about it. And I would recommend that everybody take a look at the Citizens Counter Coup. It's a good way to get yourself active and to be actually doing something positive on a regular basis, set up so you can be doing something every month. Not sure if Les is on the line yet. Les, are you there? Not yet. We'll be pulling him in after the break, I guess. But you know, I'm really looking forward to talking with Les, because I really think he, more than just about anybody except a handful of people I know, has really been leading the way in trying to turn this whole so-called conspiracy theory-based movement of people speculating about what might have happened into a political force that is focused on getting results. And I think that's what we need to be doing. There's an essay by Rabbi Michael Lerner in the book I just co-edited. It's called 9/11 and American Empire, Christians, Jews, and Muslims Speak Out. You can get it on Amazon. And Rabbi Lerner, with whom I don't agree about everything, contributed a terrific essay to that volume in which he points out that speculating about what might have happened on 9/11, just like speculating about what might have happened to JFK, what might have happened to RFK, what might have happened to Martin Luther King, what might have happened to Malcolm X, speculating on how the Federal Reserve might have put together their current control situation, that kind of speculation doesn't necessarily take us to where we want to go. We need a plan to get there. And Les Jamison is one of the best people I know at laying out that plan. We'll be with him after the break.
Thank you.
Imagination from one of my favorite secularists, Mr. Lennon. This is Kevin Barrett on Truth Jihad Radio. And tonight we're going to have with us a really special guest, one of the leading 9/11 truth activists in the world, and certainly in New York, ground zero for 9/11 as well as 9/11 truth. It's Les Jamieson of New York 9/11truth.org and Citizens Countercoup. Are you there yet, Les? Yes, not. We're still working on getting a hold of Les. So, in the meantime, I'll tell you a little bit about what we'll be talking about. Les is currently involved in the first responder issues around 9/11. He has been working with people who were poisoned by this toxic dust that was produced when the Twin Towers were turned into powder. That's right. They didn't crumble into concrete shards. They turned into powder. So, 100 micron dust or less. This it's like talcum powder or something. Everything in the buildings, except for the steel, and I guess some of the aluminum, turned into powder. Computers, concrete, human beings, desks, telephones, just all turned to powder, came right down, made a pile just a couple of stories high. And what happened, apparently, was most of this dust got blown out into those pyroclastic dust flow clouds that we've all seen on the videos. And people were breathing that stuff, especially the first responders. And man, was it ever toxic. They got some really nasty stuff in their lungs, including toxic metals from computer materials, and other kinds of toxins, asbestos. The Twin Towers were full of asbestos. New York had been trying to find a way to take them down for years, and they couldn't because it would be too expensive to take out the asbestos. So the asbestos were turned into powder. And they went into the lungs of the first responders, and a lot of those people are sick, and many have died, and they're trying to get some help for their health. And Les has been working hard on that issue, as have some other people. One of the key things about working on those first responder health issues is that if we can make inroads there, the question will naturally arise, how did these gigantic 100-story buildings turn into powder? If they came down in a fire-induced collapse, you would have had concrete piles of broken concrete that would have been fairly high. But no, they were just pulverized. There's a huge energy deficit in the government's theory about how this happened. It would require a vast amount of energy to turn everything in these towers, except for some of the metal, into the powder. And that just said wouldn't go up to 100 foot and a cup in a cold collapse, as David Griffin is over a building off concrete block and it landed. It's like, and go down and see what happened to it. We're not going to be 100 micron dust. It's going to be chunks. So that pyroclastic flow dust cloud that enveloped people, including the first responders on 9/11, had to have been created by a massive source of energy. And the only explanation would be a massive source of energy that was put in place specifically to take down those buildings, which were, of course, the biggest white elephants in the history of architecture, bleeding massive amounts of money for the city of New York every year. The city's been trying to find a way to take those buildings down for a decade or more, and they couldn't because it was too expensive to clean up the asbestos in place six before the 9/11 on massive t- and boom, runs and the collapse in money is theft. The city is what the of course, minutes before the recent Fulton being when the responders are magical. And Larry Silverstein came along, privatized the sweet on, took out a mayor insurance policy. These things to make for their health issues. There's going to be some noise made about the source of all that dust that they were forced to breathe while they were trying to help people. Are you there yet, Les? Because he knows a lot more about this than I do. I'm looking forward to bringing him on. Apparently, we haven't been able to get a hold of him yet. Along with his work on first responder issues, which I also talked to Willie Rodriguez about a while back, he's also looking at strategies for public outreach and outreach to the progressive movement, such as that is, and to the new Congress, which maybe wasn't elected because of tremendous hopes the people have in them, but more because the people are just fed up with these neo-clowns in power, these folks who brought us the 9/11 wars, the massive federal deficits that have followed, the trade deficits that are ballooning and just about to torpedo the U.S. currency, which is actually, of course, Federal Reserve currency, minted and backed by nothing by a privatized consortium of gigantic banks. And so I think people are just fed up with these neo-clowns. They elected a bunch of new people into Congress. Whether those new people are going to get anything done in the next 2 years is a whole other question. Les apparently has some ideas for strategies for public outreach to those people. Well, Les, if you're listening and you're trying to find a way to get a hold of this station, and anybody else who wants to call in, if assuming that Les can't get through, you can call us here at 800-313-9443. That's right. You can call in to Truth Jihad Radio at 800-313-9443. We're going to be here for 2 hours till 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern, and you can figure it out if you're elsewhere around the world listening on radio at rbnlive.com, one of the best places to go on the web. We're talking about strategies for 9/11 truth outreach to the general public. Les Jamison's one of the leaders of that. He led a workshop on that at the Truth Convergence in D.C. July 2005, my first 9/11 truth event. It's interesting that Les got started in January 2004 with his weekly Ground Zero leafleting, because that was right about when I also got started in 9/11 truth. I really woke up to just how bad this was in November and December of 2003. And by January 2004, I was pretty much at the point of realizing I was going to have to put a serious effort into this issue. I don't know exactly what Les is saying we should be doing with the new Congress, but I would imagine that he's going to be arguing in favor of focusing on these first responder issues, the same things that Willie Rodriguez talked about when we had Willie on a couple of weeks ago. He was talking from Ground Zero itself. He was right down there in the thick of it. And he is in the thick of it, these efforts to get some public attention for these first responders who are dying in so many cases of this toxic dust that they were breathing and that the government and that Christy Todd Whitman was saying was perfectly okay to breathe. Go on down there and suck it in your lungs, folks. Man, you know, if you don't think the government will lie to you about anything important, just take a look at that. I mean, that's stuff from the World Trade Center was really, really nasty. And these people have got DNA from victims of 9/11 in their lungs. Now, what turned, you know, human bodies into, you know, submicron dust that would put DNA from other people into the lungs of first responders? You know, again, it's that massive energy source that must have been used to destroy these buildings and turn them to dust, and send that dust flowing outwards away from Ground Zero in these pyroclastic dust flows, which are characteristic of only volcanoes and massive explosions like nuclear bombs. And thus, the toxic dust that the first responders breathe is, in fact, one more proof that these towers were taken down in controlled demolition with explosives or some high-energy source, certainly not just gravity-driven collapses, because there was just not enough energy in the full gravitational energy of these buildings to explain how you could turn everything into 100 micron dust and blast it out in pyroclastic dust clouds, volcanic or nuclear-like dust clouds, and send that out all over New York and poison people's lungs. So Les is going to be arguing that first responder issue is going to be a good one to take to Congress, to get people aware of the governmental neglect of these heroes who were out saving people on 9/11, and to also call attention to the demolition of the towers. There is another avenue besides Congress, which is legal process. What kind of lawsuits have been filed? What is the prognosis or progress in those lawsuits? And what's the best in future legal endeavors? How are we ever going to get to the stage where we can actually subpoena people and get people in there and force them to testify? How are we going to force Larry Silverstein to testify about his Pullitt remark about why he wanted to invest in the biggest white elephant in real estate history, and he just happened to hit the jackpot by doing it 6 weeks before 9/11 after over-insuring himself for terrorist attacks? And Kim, bring in Rudy Giuliani, asked exactly how he knew that those towers were coming down before they did. He said he knew they were going to come down. How did he know? Nobody else did. Nobody ever imagined that a fire was going to take those things down. They were massive. The guy who designed these towers said they could take multiple hits from these largest jetliners around. So we'll get Giuliani in there to see who told him that these things were coming down. We'll get we need to be able to get people in court and testifying under oath. We need prosecutors to be able to subpoena people. And boy, we have a lot of work ahead of us. And when we come back, we'll have hopefully Les Jamison, New York 9/11 Truth, and of the Citizens Counter Coup. And if we don't, you guys can always call on in yourself. That's 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443. Kevin Barrett, and we're playing some mind games. The government's without playing mind games. 9/11 was probably the biggest, ugliest mind game any government's ever played. And we're turning it around and playing our own mind game right back. We're going to try to make the world as much better by our 9/11 truth activism as the perps did try to make it worse with this atrocity that they committed. Well, it sounds like we've finally gotten in touch with Les Jamison of New York 9/11 Truth and Citizens Counter Coup. And are you with us, Les?
I'm right here. Good to be with you, Kevin.
Hey, great to hear you, Les. How are you doing?
Excellent, thank you.
So, yeah, as in the first few minutes of the show, we kind of introduced you and some of the topics we'd like you to talk about. And right at the top of the list is the question of the first responders and their health issues. What's happening on that front right now?
Absolutely. This is a very important topic for all responders, as well as all 9/11 truth movement activists and the general public around the country. Every American citizen needs to be aware of this, and it's a problem because there's a very big lack of awareness. It comes down to this. The people that responded to 9/11 to perform a very heroic duty that we're all aware of here have been abandoned by the government, just like the soldiers who were in Vietnam, who were exposed to Agent Orange, were abandoned. The soldiers who were exposed to DU in Iraq are people who responded to 9/11, and they came from all over the country, were exposed to very, very drastic levels of toxins in the air. We've all seen those pictures of the huge cloud and filled with asbestos, lead, mercury, cadmium. It was just a huge toxic soup of lethal ingredients. And here it is, over five years later, and many of them have not only been sick and terribly, but they've been abandoned in that the federal government is leaving them stranded financially. So many of them are broke because they can't afford the treatments, their medications. And in terms of treatment, the services for the physical illnesses they're woefully inadequate, and it's going to only get worse because more of them are going to get sick. More residents who live in southern Manhattan are going to get sick, and many are saying that this is a disaster that's going to be almost like Chernobyl-sized, okay? The politicians have left them stranded. There was legislation by Carolyn Maloney to bring in more funds to attend to their medical needs, and it was blocked by a congressman named Ackerman, I think it's Gary Ackerman, for the reason being because Ackerman did not want New York City and state to have any financial liability for 9/11. And isn't that ridiculous? I think New York State has a $6 billion surplus. And how much are we spending in Iraq every month, you know? And they won't come up with several billion dollars to take care of the needs of these responders who, you know, were the first ones to run into harm's way on 9/11.
That is disgusting. As far as that liability issue, are they possibly afraid that this thing's just going to spiral way out of control and they're going to go broke, or are they just being stingy? I mean, that's
they're being stingy, and yes, they somehow think that having come up with several billion dollars, say even $5 to $10 billion, $1 billion is sitting right off in a bank account in, I believe, Bermuda or the Bahamas. An offshore bank account has $1 billion from which the New York City leadership, from Bloomberg right down to the legal teams, have extracted $40 million to spend on lawyers to block the claims of 9/11 responders. They spent $40 million on lawyers.
That's outrageous.
Yeah.
How is the New York media covering this?
The New York Post, believe it or not, is giving it some quite good coverage. If you go to New York Post, nypost.com, there's a link on the left side that will lead to a whole list of stories. There's a journalist named Susan Edelman has done a great job of covering this. The New York Daily News has done some decent coverage as well. And the mainstream media had some coverage right after 9/11 this year, I'd say in October. I forget what it was. Oh, some story came out with James Zadroga, possibly, who is the detective, New York detective, who died age 34. And his autopsy clearly showed that his death was due to toxic exposure at Ground Zero. One of those stories.
Okay, well, we'll have to pick up the story about James Zadroga after the break. Sounds to me like instant karma is going to get those New York City poobahs who've got $6 billion stuffed in their bank accounts, including a billion offshore, and they paid $40 million for lawyers to prevent any kind of help going to the 9/11 first responders who are suffering from toxic dust in their lungs, and some of them are dying, including James Zadroga, we just heard. I'm here with Les Jamison of New York 9/11 Truth and Citizens Countercoup. And we've been talking about this the scandal of the neglect of the first responders. You want to pick up where we left off, Les?
Sure. I was at an event 2 weeks ago, and there were several interesting speakers there and about 20 responders. Some of them were on oxygen, and you were hearing coughs the whole night. You wouldn't believe the like somebody who's been a smoker for, you know, 40 years, that type of a cough. And and they're saying this, the responders are saying, hey, it's been over 5 years here. We're mad. We're frustrated. One woman was saying, you know, I have post-traumatic stress syndrome so bad, I can't think straight. I can't keep a job. I have a family. I've lost my home. I don't know what to do. it's like that. These people have really been abandoned. Others who are very, very sick, they've been given the runaround. They're trying to get services from, workers' compensation in terms of just survival money. And one guy, his name's Mike McCormick, had to go through a whole set of procedures to prove that he was even there on 9/11 when he was the one who found the American flag in the rubble, which was then used to promote American patriotism as a response to 9/11. And he was hailed by everybody from George Bush on down to mainstream media sources. And yet he had to prove that he was there in order to get workers' comp, and then the waiting, making him wait several months. And in the meantime, you know, for instance, we had an event where he spoke at, and we took a collection for him, came up like $100, and he ran out and had to use that money to buy his prescriptions. You know, because these people are on anywhere from 10 to 15 and more prescriptions. And they feel that, you know, they're so sick, they're not getting better, that the government is basically just waiting for them to die. That's exactly how they feel. So we, as activists, or whether you're just from the general public listening to this broadcast, need to know that there's a horrible situation here where first responders, numbering as high as 40,000, 45,000, came all around the country to this site of the biggest disaster on U.S. soil ever, and of course the mega scandal of our time. They've been abandoned, and this is another layer of scandal that is incomprehensible, unfathomable, and intolerable that we cannot be silent about. We all need to become active, to write our congresspeople and legislators. And I'm thinking of sources of information that catalog this information that you can go to on the Internet. One is WTCEO.org. It's a World Trade Center environmental organization. Read about it there. Also, 911EA.org. I'm just going to double-check that. Also, just go to NewYorkPost.com, and you'll see the link on 9/11 responder articles on the left side towards the bottom. So get informed and stay in tune.
Well, good for the New York Post. It's not often I say that. In fact, I've been pretty disappointed in the performance of the New York media and just about all the corporate media in this country since 9/11. But I'm glad to hear that there's one little bright spot there on the silver lining on the toxic dust cloud, as it were. We do have a caller on the line. Richard from Texas. Are you there, Richard? Hello?
Hello, Kevin. Can you hear me?
Yeah. How you doing, Richard?
Yes. Hey, thanks for having Les on. And Les, I got a question for you. What does your group view as Rudolph Giuliani's part and role in 9/11?
Very direct role, actually. The evidence is that he was told by his Office of Emergency Management that morning that the towers were going to collapse. And interestingly, he has his Office of Emergency Management that was moved from one police plaza to Building 7. And one of our people came across a document from the police department in which the police department opposed the OEM office being moved from Police Plaza to WTC 7. Very bizarre. So there he was that morning. He then moved with his crew over to an office on Barclay Street, which is a little north of the Trade Center complex, when he found out that the towers were going to come down. And yet, of course, the people who were in those towers were not evacuated. They, in the South Tower, they were told that stay, remain at your seats, everything is safe and you're fine. And of course, many of them perished, and it was a disaster. The other issue with Giuliani, I just found out that in terms of the environmental issue, there was an article that was going to be printed, I forget if you even posted, the Daily News, and his office called the newspaper and quashed the article because it would scare the residents and the workers and prevent Wall Street from opening back up, or prevent people from going out and shopping. Remember Rudy Giuliani? That's what his decree was. Come on in and shop. This is your civic duty.
So, not until you drop.
And so and the responders and the community that's affected by the health disaster all knows that they were lied to for the direct reason that Giuliani and any other official of the Wall Street people wanted Wall Street back open. And there's one other topic about Giuliani here that, you know, he was given a very easy ride when he appeared in the New York Commission's hearings, the 9/11 Commission's hearings in New York. That was in April of 2004, when the series of hearings as part of the 9/11 official investigation occurred. And interestingly, what happened was the commissioners, Keene, Hamilton, and any of the others, they just showered him with compliments for appearing like a leader and all that day. And the 9/11 victims' families were appalled at what was going on. They took it so easy on him. And there's another aspect to this whole disaster, a scandal within a scandal, which is the fire department's communications. Okay, there were serious problems with the radios, and it was these Motorola radios that were known to be defective. There's a book on this called Radio Silence. Bill Bowen is one of the authors, and Giuliani, in his office, his consulting firm, I believe, is represents Motorola, so he has some type of involvement in the city's purchasing these radios for the fire department. So that's to be questioned very much.
Well,
the reason I asked about the Rudolph Giuliani thing is, as you know, there's a bunch of presidential wannabes kind of lining up, and he's one of them.
Yes.
And on the Republican side, and then we've got Hillary on the Democrat side, and I'm just afraid if the powers that be end up selecting Giuliani as a Republican candidate and Hillary as a Democrat candidate, that maybe what happens in that campaign is Giuliani gets outed for 9/11 complicity, which would give, by default, Hillary the presidency.
Yeah, yeah. You raise an interesting point, Richard. And Webster Toffoli brought this up at an event in Washington, D.C. of about 3 weeks ago. When these campaigns for the 2008 presidential elections occur, both Giuliani and John McCain, need to be confronted when they go to the first two states, which are New Hampshire and Iowa. Okay, Rudy's got to be confronted for his involvement in 9/11, for these hard issues that he needs to be confronted with, and then John McCain also has to be confronted with his writing the foreword to the 9/11 myths, 9/11 debunking 9/11 myths book by Popular Mechanics that came out last summer. So, in terms of the presidential elections coming up, all activists need to really have this on their radar screen.
Yeah, right.
In terms of Hillary, I don't know. She, I know so many Democrats that are not happy with her at all, so it's hard to say where she's going to wind up.
Well, she's been beating the drums for a war with Iran. She thinks we might need to send more troops into Iraq, so I don't know if she's really much of an alternative here. But I think Webster Tarpley's point about trying to confront Giuliani and McCain in New Hampshire and Iowa is a terrific idea, because that's the politics at the retail level, where you can actually get in the face of these guys over and over and over. And if we can track them down and just keep, you know, keep in their faces throughout the entire campaign in New Hampshire and Iowa, that's going to make it into the media.
Right, and we should do that on the Democrat side with Hillary as well, because I'm sure she's no 9/11 truth activist herself.
Oh, that's for sure.
Kevin, I got a question for you. I agree with you on this 9/11 event with that pyroclastic cloud that you're talking about. But there's got to be, I don't know, is thermite enough of an energy source to create that type of cloud and that type of micron dust?
Well, there's been a debate about that, Stephen Jones thinks that it probably is, but I don't think he's ever ruled out other supplemental energy sources for the demolition. And then there was a very harsh criticism of him, and I thought a kind of unfounded one in some ways, though not entirely irrational, coming from Morgan Reynolds and Judy Woods, who are claiming that there might, you know, they've got this whole theory about what else might have happened with some kind of energy weapon. Personally, I don't know, and I'm not sure it really makes a difference. Frankly, I think what Les is doing in New York, as far as actually doing on-the-ground politics and forcing this issue into the political mainstream through these wedges, like going to New Hampshire and Iowa, like defending the first responders, I think this is where we should be putting our energy, and not trying to prove exactly what happened. There's no way we're going to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt anyway. We can prove they demolished those towers beyond a reasonable doubt. We just can't prove exactly how they did it. But we have a long list of pieces of evidence that show that this was not a natural collapse. We also have all kinds of cumulative evidence showing that the 9/11 attacks were known about in advance, and in fact must have been perpetrated by means that we can speculate about. But I don't think we should get overly swept up by speculation. I don't know. What do you think about that, Les? I don't know if I'm.
Yeah. I agree with you, though, is that, I appreciate you taking my call, and definitely we've got to keep the 9/11 Truth Movement going, and I don't think that's going to be a problem. We just have to keep on firing on all cylinders.
All right. Well,
thank you for my call.
Okay. Thank you for calling in, Richard. Les, are you still with us? Yeah, we seem to have lost Les Jamison. Oh, okay. Well, anyway, this is Kevin Barrett of Truth Jihad Radio. I just was talking to Richard from Texas. And he was asking whether he thought thermite alone was enough to pulverize those towers into sub-100-micron dust and blow out these gigantic pyroclastic clouds every which way. And my answer would be, well, you know, I'm not really sure. I know, you know, Steve Jones's work has focused on things like molten steel and other very basic and convincing pieces of evidence for controlled demolition. And then there have been alternative hypotheses that would suggest that some other high-tech weapon might have been involved as far as causing everything in the towers except for some of the metal to turn into 100-micron dust and be blasted out in the form of a pyroclastic cloud. Well, you know, I don't have the answer to that, folks. I'm not a physicist, but you don't have to be a physicist to look at what happened to these towers and know that they were taken down in controlled demolition. I don't think any reasonable person with a grasp of elementary physics, even an intuitive grasp, can look at the video footage of these explosions. They weren't collapses, they were explosions, and tell me that what you're seeing is a gravity-driven collapse. That is just utterly obvious. And once we know that, then the question of exactly what mechanism was used to produce these demolitions becomes pretty secondary or tertiary or quaternary or whatever you want to call it. So that was a point that I was getting back to Richard with as far as basically unproductive nature of activists like us worrying too much about exactly how they did it, and instead we should be focusing on what we can do about it. And I think Les is one of our leading experts on that. Are you with me on that, Les?
Yes, I definitely am. We don't need to be obsessing over the every astro details of Pentagon, the collapse or the flights, there are overpowering general concepts here. Anybody with a critical thinking mind can recognize and say, "Wow, in a court of law, these are actionable arguments that prove that the official story could not be true." And I think, you know, after, 5 years of research and 3 years of full-time activism, you know where I wind up back to is the basics, the fundamental issues of 9/11, such as the dereliction of duty, which is a category that is a very serious charge that can be proven by the months and months and years of plethora of foreknowledge that we just keep getting more and more information on.
Oh, did you notice Al Gore's remark the other day about how that August memo Bin Laden determined to attack in U.S. and Bush's reaction to the CIA guy who brought him the memo was he turned to him and said, "Well, you've covered your ass."
Yeah.
Did you catch that?
Yeah.
I mean, what could that possibly mean? I mean, yeah. I mean, you know. Yeah, we've got actionable intelligence on this matter for sure, and we'll be talking some more about what that actionable intelligence is when I join Les Jamison for some more conversation after the break. Jihad Radio, and those kids on the phone won't leave us alone either. We do have some phone callers lined up, so stay with us, phone callers. This is Kevin Barrett of Truth Jihad Radio talking to Les Jamison of New York 9/11 Truth and Citizens Counter Coup. And Les was just lining up what he sees as the basics of actionable intelligence we have that we can use to bring these 9/11 perps to court. And he started out with talking about dereliction of duty, I guess reading My Pet Goat for 10 minutes while the country is allegedly under surprise attack from the air with no effort to take charge as commander-in-chief and the Secret Service putting forth no effort to protect the commander-in-chief would constitute dereliction of duty. What are some of those other points real quickly, Les, so we can get to the callers?
About obstruction of justice. In the Massawi trial that occurred early this year, and this was in a lot of news articles, certain field agents, FBI field agents, Colleen Rowley, of course, and Harry Samet, were working feverishly to try and get the headquarters to take notice of Massawi, and had all kinds of evidence that things were not kosher with this guy. He was very suspicious. And Harry Samet wrote 70 memos, okay, and not one of them was acted upon. So, and yet, the three superiors up his chain of command, which are David Fasca, Michael Maltby, and Spike Bowman, were later promoted. Okay, this is obstruction of justice. Okay, that's just one example of that particular charge. Another one, a very serious charge: destruction of evidence. How about the removal of the steel at Ground Zero? This is a felony, and by the way, this is another thing that Rudy Giuliani can be. It was city agencies that basically managed the site and cleared out Ground Zero as quickly as possible and destroyed the evidence. This is very important. People who are not aware of this should really look into this because one particular charge alone, by the way, it can only. It may only be necessary for one denial here. Also, destruction of evidence in the case of the FAA tapes, that these were tapes of interviews with flight controllers, and I think it was in an installation on Long Island, if I remember correctly, where a manager took these tapes, broke them up physically, and distributed them and distributed them in various trash cans around that particular site. What else? Oh, then, of course, the cover-up. You know, this is so clear. 14 months it took for an investigation, which was then obstructed, underfunded, and treated as something to block and suppress I could go on for an hour just on that alone, but that's malfeasance.
Yeah, I'd call that malfeasance, dereliction of duty, obstruction of justice, destruction of evidence. I think there are definitely a lot of ways to nail these people, and we better get going on this while we still have a legal system with which to do it.
Right, and the important...
We'll be back after the break.
Okay, very good.
Truth Jihad Radio, and I am sick of hearing things from short-sighted, narrow-minded, uptight hypocrites, but I'm not sick of hearing things from callers, unless we do have some callers on the line. Let's get to Charlotte from Texas.
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I sure can. How are you doing?
Okay, great. Well, first off, I want to thank you, gentlemen, for everything you're doing. I really appreciate it. When I woke up to the 9/11 truth, I took it upon myself to go to the local fire station. Actually, it wasn't a fire station. It was a maintenance facility. And I approached some of the firemen working there. Well, I came to find out that one of the firemen I ended up talking with, his brother was actually dying after having helped at Ground Zero. I do believe he was a New York firefighter. Mm. And I was telling him about, you know, World Trade Center 7 and everything. And I asked him, I said, how is it that you're not getting support? You know, what is the problem? And he said, well, you know, they have health insurance and they have life insurance. But essentially, some of these people are becoming so ill that I think it's in the employment agreements, like civil service, or I'm not exactly sure how they're employed. But a lot of times they become too ill and too incapacitated to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it seems like the administrative systems that are, you know, supposed to be designed to, you know, that's where the failure is.
Absolutely. It's like if you showed up to Ground Zero. And you're a volunteer, which is the case for so many of them, the majority of them, then the city and the state, the feds, they'll say, well, you know, we didn't call you and ask you to be there. Therefore, you went on your own, so guess what? You're stuck.
Now, there was an implied call out for help. You know, you guys posed the question, you know, why is it happening? Why are they doing this? This is going to sound very cynical, but to this day... Troops are still deploying to Afghanistan and Iraq without proper body armor.
Right.
They're still deploying without up-armored vehicles. And then we have, of course, what's happening to the first responders. And I know this sounds cynical, but population control, I can't think of anything. It's total disgrace.
The responders, you know what they think is that they really feel the government just wants to wait them out until they die off.
They do.
Like I was saying earlier, because many of them were there and saw things. They were witnesses to what went on down there. And what went on down there was another layer of the crime, which is the removal of the steel. Many of them witnessed the molten metal, which is also scientific proof of explosives, like thermite being used, things like this. So these people who have inside evidence and so on and so forth, and their liability as far as the government is concerned.
Is there any effort being made, Les, to try to get these people down on the record, on tape, you know, on film, on video, and have them tell their story and try and get this story out to the American people?
Yes. I have some film of a few of them. Oh, gosh, I met one who was a carpenter. This was several months ago. We were just out doing a street action. We're out at least a couple times a week in various locations in the city. And this guy was a carpenter. And for some reason, the Carpenters Union was completely disregarded in every way. And he had a friend who was very sick, who was dying, who spent months down there. And for some reason, the carpenters were just, like, completely invisible, okay? We are just starting to meet more of them who are to the point where they figure, you know, geez, I'm going to die anyway. I'm going to go down fighting because the way I've been treated is just horrendous.
Well, you know,
we're working on it. And,
we need to start a database to collect all this information because nobody's collecting the total numbers.
Well, that sounds like a plan to me, and we'll get back to discussing it and taking more calls after the break.
There's matches in the bathroom, just fill on the stairs. Always something happening, and nothing going on. There's always something cooking.
Well, we're back here on Truth Jihad Radio. This is Kevin Barrett, your host. And tonight I have with me Les Jamison. We're talking about what's going on in New York right now with the first responders and their health problems. We're also talking about efforts to do something about the 9/11 scandal, not just complain about it, not just speculate about what might have happened, but actually get out there and do something about it, nail the perps, and turn our country around. And we do have a bunch more callers on the line. We're starting out with Will from Missouri. Are you there, Will?
Yes, I am here, Will, Kevin and Les, and I'd like to change the focus by staying on the strategy, just alter the strategy just a little teeny bit. I think that we've overlooked one thing that is a very possible weakness in all of this, and that would be to simply initiate a class action lawsuit naming both the city of New York and Larry Silverstein in the unlawful demolition of World Trade Center number 7. And then follow through with that with a failure to prepare a SEPA checklist or environmental impact statement, wanton destruction, of course, of public and private property, reckless endangerment, capital homicide, failure to adequately barricade streets. Go through everything in the building department that they had violated if they had actually demolished the building without securing the proper permit. Now, if that could be affected, then Silverstein and crew would have to defend against a demolition that was not following the proper procedures. If they were not able to do that and would take the defense that, well, they didn't blow the building down, well, then they would have to show how did the building come down. And I think that if this was pursued in vacuo of everything else that happened on September 11th, as if nothing else occurred, and just continually focus on that building and how they brought this building down in a demolition without proper permits, barricades, and various reports, that we would have an opportunity to put this thing right back on the front burner again and get Giuliani involved in it, get the city of New York involved in it, bring in the AIA, the contractors, the engineers, and the fire department, and the police, and everybody else, but basically just keep it focused on the demolition of a building without an adequate permit.
Mm. That sounds like an excellent strategy, Will. It really does, and it sounds like you've done your homework. These are the type of approaches we need that are legally accessible and viable. And I just want to add that we next need to find lawyers that are willing to go after this in New York, and hopefully there are still some here that we can approach, and we need a strategy just to get the lawyers willing to take this on, work to get a grand jury. I'm told by one attorney here that there's far, far more evidence than even necessary to commence a grand jury. All you have to show doubt and a crime to warrant an investigation. And the other thing I just want to say, folks, is in terms of the impeachment movement happening now, especially after the midterm election, you know, we need to focus harder than ever for the next 4 to 6 months, because time-wise, I think that we want to get these things in motion within the next year so that this president, although he can be impeached after leaving office, I would think we want justice now while he's in office. Would you all agree?
Well, it makes sense to me. You know, I always said that should be a tangible goal of the 9/11 Truth Movement, to try to make sure that Bush and Cheney left office in chains rather than by the normal door.
Well, if I could jump in one last thing, and then I'll get off the line and let you get to the next callers. But, again, this is complicating issues, okay? What I mentioned was in vacuo, as if nothing else happened. So I think a good place to start, if I were in New York and I were interested in looking into this, I would be going after, first of all, the building department in New York. I'd like to see the records of Larry Silverstein's demolition permit, please, and so on and so forth, and start on that effort. And then let the city of New York defend against the people, saying that they allowed this or permitted this demolition to occur without a permit. Why? And
yes.
Then if they wasn't allowed to do without a permit, then it comes back to Larry Silverstein. You see, and you just whipsaw back and forth, use the agencies against the man against the agencies, and get the brawl started in that direction. And I think you'd get a lot of media play, a lot of attention, and it would be something that you could do pro bono right up front, pro se or whatever.
Sure.
Start it that way and get it started. And then if you are serious in it and you have enough people behind you, I think that the attorney will be found.
Will, if you would get in touch with me so we can be in contact, because you could possibly advise and consult on these ideas to initiate this. And you can reach me at info@ny911truth.org. That'd be great.
911truth.org. Thank you. We'll do it.
Okay, well, thank you,
Kevin.
Will. I think that was a terrific idea. We have another caller calling all the way from British Columbia, Canada. That's Daniel. Are you there with us, Daniel?
I am indeed. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening to you.
Yeah, just a quick comment on your last caller's brilliant idea. However, I'm not a lawyer. I grew up honest. I don't know what it is. But anyway, I think the idea of litigation is brilliant. What he's wrong about is the allegation, this business about licenses. You can come up with something, because that can be, you know, you can get around that. Even me, I can say them saying it was an emergency. We're going to go to city council and apply for a permit. But the fact is, there are many other charges that can be litigated and force these people into court. Anyway, that's that point. I would hope that you can explain something to me, that because I know you both have your ears to the ground, that's starting to drive me crazy. And here's what it is. I heard on the internet radio, I can't remember which program, but George Bush stating that this was very clever, that through a process of American-type interrogation, i.e. torture, that they got Sheikh Khalid to admit that they had placed, Al-Qaeda had placed explosives in the building, and went on to editorialize by saying, and we wanted to place high enough so people wouldn't be able to get out from the upper floors. Why have I not heard this mentioned by anybody else in the movement?
Well, Les, are you familiar with that quote? I'm not sure what I saw
on
that
air,
quote.
I heard it.
Okay. Yeah, I did read this, but I don't know if Bush actually went into detail about there being explosives, but he did say something about them blowing the floor.
I kid you not, Kevin. I heard him. It was his voice. See, what he was trying to do was to justify the torture, because they got this information, and it also explained the fact of the presence of explosives. I heard him.
Well,
believe me, unless I'm insane.
Yes, I have heard of this fairly recently. I just have not had time to research it, but it's something that we all should research and point out. That's excellent. If that's in fact true, that we can get the documentation on that, which I'll look for it right after this. So good.
Okay,
point.
And you know what I'd like to do? Could I contact you through that? You mentioned your, what is it, website or email?
Info@ny911truth.org.
Info?
Yes.
Info 9?
info@ny911truth.org. And there are some really good things that we can use to implicate Bush. The fact that Ron Suskind in his book, we should, invoke Ron Suskind's name because he's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, and he brought out this fact that Kevin mentioned earlier, how the CIA briefer on August 6th, met him to deliver the PDB, and, of course, he made that statement saying, okay, now you've covered your ass. Things of this nature, we really absolutely have to implicate.
And getting the former Secretary of Transportation to explain this young man that came in and challenged Cheney. I heard, who was it? One of the guys, right, in the movement actually talked to, what was his name?
Armin Mineta.
Secretary? Yeah. He actually talked to him at a conference, and he said, oh, what a golden opportunity to get some clarification on who this young man was. And he said he got nothing but obfuscation from him. He didn't answer it, the question.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't surprise me.
Court, huh?
Doesn't surprise me. I think, it was interesting that Mineta resigned his post on the very day after Jim Fetzer had described that stand-down order incident. Fetzer was on Fox News describing Mineta's testimony to the 9/11 Commission. That was Fetzer dismembering Ollie North on Fox News. And relating a very graphic description of Mineta's testimony implicating Cheney in a stand-down order, the very next day, Mineta resigned. And now Mineta doesn't have to answer questions. Yeah.
Whoa. Okay, look, I'm really, really glad. You know what I got to say finally, right? And I know you got other callers. But you know what's so nice to hear is the movement coming from the coast. From the east and hopefully eventually the west coast. There's a level of sophistication there and seriousness that I find is just really great to hear.
Well, hey, thanks. Yep, Les is right, ground zero, not just the coast. We'll be back after the break and pick it right back up. Stay tuned. Okay, we're back on Truth Jihad Radio. This is your host, Kevin Barrick, and I'm here talking to Les Jamison of New York 9/11 Truth and Citizens Countercoup. He's one of probably the world's leading 9/11 Truth activists. He's got some real good ideas about how to take 9/11 Truth and make it into an effective citizens movement by going through the political system and the judicial system. I'd like to change the topic just a little bit. The 9/11 New Pearl Harbor, designed to bring on war and fascism, in fact, two wars that were pre-planned before 9/11 and all set to go. They just needed the trigger at the Afghanistan invasion and the Iraq invasion, and then two massive rollbacks in civil liberties, the Patriot Act, which was written before 9/11 and brought out on schedule with its grease the skids with anthrax from Fort Detrick Biological Warfare Facility, sent to Dashley and Leahy, two leading congressmen who could have blocked the Patriot Act. And then we had the NSA spy program put in place before 9/11 and only brought out later and blamed on 9/11. So we've had some serious war consequences, some serious civil liberties consequences to this 9/11 New Pearl Harbor. And I wanted to talk to Les a little bit before we go to the callers about a couple of civil liberties issues that have exploded into headlines in the past couple of days. There was a minivan in New York where a guy was just shot down with more than 50 shots fired by drinking off-duty police officers, which is causing demonstrations in the streets of New York. And then there was a case where six Muslim clergymen were taken off a plane and abused just for being Muslims under this lame excuse that the way they were sitting on the plane was sort of like the pattern of these alleged 9/11 hijackers. And, of course, we know there weren't any 9/11 hijackers. Man, 10 of those guys are still alive, and one of them was dead a year before 9/11. This thing is a really sick joke. And so, Les, do you have any comments about these civil liberties abuses that are coming at us from every which way, and specifically that one in New York with the guy shot down in the minivan? Les, still there? Hello. Sounds like Les may have dropped off. That's what I get for going on too long. In that case, let's just bring on a caller. I believe we have Deborah from Maryland on the line. Hello, Deborah. Are you there? Deborah? Hello?
Deborah?
I don't know. Is this Troy?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, there was a Deborah, but I guess she dropped off too. How you doing, Troy?
All right. Now, where in the world are you getting this 10 hijackers are still alive stuff?
Well, probably the best documented article about that is an article in the collection published that the academic 9/11 book published in Holland by Paul Zaremka is the editor, Z-A-R-E-M, I believe it's B-E-M-B-K-A. Just Google Zaremka, and you'll get his academic 9/11 collection. There's an article in there that treats the topic pretty carefully. Nafis Ahmad also discusses this evidence in his articles and books, including his recent 9/11 book, The War on Truth. The documentation for these hijackers ranges from BBC reports, Guardian reports, reports in other mainstream media, reports of one of them, Walid al-Ashari, coming into the U.S. Embassy in Rabat, Morocco, and saying, yeah, this is my picture. Yeah, I took flight lessons at that flight school, but hey, here I am. And many other cases as well. There, you know, this may be a case of identity theft. Intelligence agencies like to run phony people. That's how they get things done. They steal people's identities. They manufacture identities. They play shell games with identities. And so there was a lot of that apparently going on 9/11. The FBI at one point even admitted that we may never know the actual identities of these hijackers.
Yes, if you want to prove 9/11 was an inside job, all you got to do is just have one of them 19 people standing right there beside you.
Well, that's right. And, you know, I hope to have an interview in Morocco with Walid al-Ashari. I'm heading for Morocco this spring, and I intend to sit down with him and interview him about what it's like to be blamed for the crime of the century.
When did you say, spring?
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Okay. Well, you'll hear it here first on rbnlive.com, your station for 9/11 Truth.
All right. So, Kevin?
Yeah. Hey, Les. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm back here. Got dropped off. In terms of the whole pattern of chipping away at our civil liberties, which is very, very serious, there's another event that just happened here in New York that is part of this whole pattern that everybody should know about, which is the NYPD is trying to pass regulations, and this is in one of the most liberal cities in the country. They're trying to pass two regulations, one saying that if any more than 10 people gather and walk, like in procession, more than two blocks, they can be arrested if they disobey traffic laws. And this can lead to, you know, who knows what. They can, with the Patriot Act and the Military Commissions Act, that can lead to anything. The door is wide open. Now, what this is really about is stifling any protest, stifling dissent. And it's absolutely ridiculous. They try to pass this about 3 months ago, and there was a backlash here in the city. Activists, the ACLU came out against it, and then it went away. Now it's back. I was at the hearing this past Monday. The second provision they're trying to pass is to criminalize bike riding in the city in groups. Very serious, and this is all an extension of 9/11 in the Patriot Act and this type of legislation where they are working very hard to suppress dissent and protest. And it's very, very serious. So,
that's absolutely right, Les. You know, I think 9/11 was our Reichstag fire, Patriot Act was our enabling act, and they're cracking down more and more all the time. It's time for us to stand up and do something about it. Yeah, I don't want to face it either, but it's the truth, folks. They blew up the World Trade Center, launch a couple of wars, and torture our Constitution. It's about time we did face it. This is Kevin Barrett of Truth Jihad Radio, talking to Les Jamison of New York 9/11truth.org and Citizens Counter Coup. We were just talking about the civil liberties violations that are coming upon us in this post-9/11, post-U.S. Reichstag fire era. And I did want to ask Les about this latest incident where I guess a black guy was shot down with 50 shots in his minivan by a bunch of off-duty drinking police officers. And it seemed, and likewise over in Minneapolis, six Muslim imams who had the temerity to pray to God in the airport were arrested for sitting in the airplane in a way that sort of reminded people of the way that these non-existent 9/11 hijackers had allegedly been hallucinated to have been sitting in the airplane that they allegedly hijacked. So Les, you know, I think most of us 9/11 truth activists, let's face it, were white, kind of from middle-class backgrounds. And, you know, should we be, you know, focusing a little bit, too, on these violations of civil liberties of people who are different from us? You know, Muslim imams, well, I'm a Muslim, so I guess I'm not that different from these guys. And you're a New Yorker, so you're not that different from the guy who got shot down. But, you know, I think these are issues that concern us as 9/11 activists, are they not?
Very truly. Anything that implicates, you know, progressives, Muslims, 9/11 activists is very serious. So anti-war activists. Did you hear about the situation of a woman who lived in an apartment building who put up a wreath, a Christmas wreath in the shape of a peace sign, was harassed by the president of the condo association or the co-ops association? You know, this is a big story that actually made it to primetime news recently. In terms of the shooting that just happened in New York, three young guys coming out of a club and some undercover cops, you know, got into a horrendous situation, and it was all triggered by some, I just would say miscommunication, misunderstanding, and the bullets started flying, and there's no explanation for how anybody, explanation how an undercover cop, you know, no identification showing that he's a cop, could be mistaken for a mugger himself, could pull off 50 rounds, shoot off 50 rounds, and you know, not be seen as an instigator of a crime here. So this is, the facts are still coming out. This only happened about a week ago, and there's very much of an outrage happening from the black community as well as other communities, and even Bloomberg himself had to admit that this looks like there's no viable explanation for it that can be explained away. That's how egregious this incident was.
So, Leslie, do you think this is an example of this issue of impunity versus accountability that we've seen? You know, 9/11, you know, if it's one thing that we can put our fingers on that all of us can agree with, is that there was no accountability for, you know, if you're a conspiracy theorist like we are, I mean, we figure that there should be accountability for active participation in this horrendous crime. But even those who think we're crazy, very few of them are listening to this show, by the way, but the people who haven't bothered to look at the evidence yet should be able to understand very quickly that there's an accountability issue here, that the people who were most egregious in their failures and their obstruction of justice and dereliction of duty that we talked about were promoted after 9/11. They should have been fired. They should have been reprimanded. They should have been charged. They should have been investigated. There was no accountability.
Right. That's a direct sign right there, folks. Nobody is held accountable for the acts of 9/11, and there's a lot of accountability to go around. And even 9/11 families who are kind of centrist Republicans, they're aware of this as well. There's another very serious civil liberties issue that everybody needs to put on their radar screen. The same day that the Military Commissions Act was passed, there's an act called Public Law 109-364, or the John Warner Defense Authorization Act of 2007, is saying that if the president declares a public emergency, he can station troops anywhere in America and take control of state-based National Guard units without the consent of the governor or local authorities in order to suppress public disorder.
Oh, boy. Well, that sounds like we better head for the hills if that ever happens, Les. it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. And this all falls under the rubric, folks, of we're at a time of war. Okay? As long as we're in the time of war, what's happening is this executive branch has set it up so that they can torture, they can wiretap, they can pass these draconian pieces of legislation that undermine the Constitution, Bill of Rights, worse than any other administration ever before, because we're at a time of war. So guess what, folks? We're going to remain in a time of war because it's advantageous to their agenda and, of course, to the war profiteers.
That's right. It's the war that will not end in our lifetime, as Cheney described it. The war on terror. As long as there's any fear left in the world, we're at war. We have a caller, Deborah from Maryland. Are you still there, Deborah?
Yes.
Hey, hi. How are you?
You hear me?
Sure can. How are you doing?
Okay. I'm great. Great interview, as always. Great show. I've got so much ground to cover, so I'll start with stuff that you had already covered. Great idea from Will with regard to dragging them in and saying, hey, you know, did you have a permit to do this? Another thing that was brought up in the course of the show was the statement from King George the Insane with regard to the explosives in the buildings and how he got about that and during the course of torture. You could go to whitehouse.gov. September 9th was the day he gave that particular presentation, if you want to put it that way, in the Rose Garden. You can watch the video and you can read the transcript.
September 9th of which year?
This year.
This year.
Uh-huh.
I see. Okay. Very good.
And in Australia, there's a brand new article out from Perth, from the Journal of 9/11 Studies, talking about the free fall speed at which all those towers fell.
Interesting.
What I loved about my past week was down in Florida handing out deception dollars along with DVDs. I did not come against a great resistance in doing that. A lot of people had a funny feeling in their gut. Things didn't make sense, didn't add up. And so, consequently, it was a great week for me. I ran into a lot of people from the continent, Europe, who, you know, were just, they became like my new best friends in explaining what had happened. They knew something was wrong. They knew they didn't believe the official story from years ago.
Yes. Yes. Europeans and foreigners are far ahead of most American citizens when it comes to the issues of 9/11 and also
the news
agenda for geopolitical domination, global domination. Today at Ground Zero, we're there every Saturday, by the way, from 1 to 4 in the afternoon.
No, Les is amazing.
I met a few young women from Turkey. And they were right on the ball, you know, and with this information. And for some reason, you know, and this was they were like in their early 20s, and they were politically aware far more than so many of our own citizens.
With that, Les, I have to fault the mainstream media in this
Absolutely.
Country. And I explained to the people, well, news in this country is nothing more than Pravda.
Yes, yes.
But at least with Pravda, the Russians knew they were being lied to.
Exactly, exactly. And 9/11 has been used in an incredible psychological operation in such that besides the trauma and the shock of the attacks and the collapse of the towers, the huge, what I call, sorrow factor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. People come to Ground Zero by the thousands every day. And I see them just walking around, taking pictures, looking into the big hole through these huge fences and looking at the signs and the pictures and the commemorative articles. And so it's like a whole memorialization that is going on of what happened today, the people that were lost and the responders and the firefighters. So it's everybody's human emotion of sorrow gets invoked. And this is then used almost to the level where it supersedes our critical thinking to look at, wait a minute, what actually happened? How could this have actually happened? This doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. The government's lied to us about every reason to invade Iraq, lied to us saying they don't torture people.
Right.
They lied to us about Katrina, saying nobody knew the levees would break.
Right.
You know, so they're critical.
Nobody could have foreseen that airplanes would be used as weapons.
There's another massive one right there in front of our faces, so very, very, very true.
And that goes totally against the whole thing that was going on prior to 9/11 when he was at the G8 summit. And they had anti-aircraft missiles, you know, the whole nine yards going on for security because they did foresee somebody using aircraft as missiles.
Well, not only did they foresee it, but on the morning of 9/11 itself, they were running a whole bunch of drills that were mimicking that exact possibility, and apparently one of those drills went live.
Several.
Yeah.
So what do we do now, folks?
Well, I think, you know, I can only do what I can only do in the sense that, you know, what drives me crazy in the 9/11 movement is people saying, oh, it's stagnant, it's this, it's that. No, it isn't. Hold the people that we just took out of office and replaced them with them.
Mm-hmm.
Hold them accountable. Hold their feet to the fire.
Absolutely.
Pelosi doesn't want to investigate. Oh, no, Pelosi's gone.
Right.
You know, somebody doesn't want to, you know, go into far too deep because, hey, you know, maybe it'll taint their side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bottom line here, and this is what mainstream Americans need to notice and feel and understand, is that neither party has represented us in a long time.
Exactly.
They're owned and controlled by corporate interests.
Exactly.
International banking, the whole nine yards.
What we have to use right now to get to these people in positions of power and influence, the poll, New York Times CBS poll that came out, I believe, in October, saying 16% of the American public believes the government story of 9/11, only 16%. So once the power structure sees the gigantic constituency that we are, they will have no choice but to react accordingly and responsibly.
Exactly.
See,
because they'll be
held on the point that we are a massive movement out here.
We're
right.
Huge.
And I think we need to get active. And you know, so often that sorrow factor that you're talking about, Les, can kind of grind us down. It's, you know, and some of the people who say, "Oh, it's not doing anything," it's because they're emotionally burned out. Because it's so emotionally draining to be doing this, you know.
Do you think
it is?
But do you find it emotionally draining?
Well,
I don't.
It's both draining and charging. You know, it has its.
It has its moment.
Yeah, it definitely has its moment. But boy,
Kevin, we can devote a whole show.
Yeah.
Which
truthfully,
is very important.
But,
I just want to get back to the what we do now. Right now, there are three major opportunities for 9/11 truth activists. One is the issue of impeachment. I'm putting together the top 10 reasons to impeach, and they're all 9/11 related. Okay, and that, of course, is very important to put on the radar screen for all of us and to use this to disseminate. The second opportunity is, now that the Democrats are in power, Osama bin Laden. Where's Osama? You know?
Tim Osman?
Put that out there. Of course, Osama is a hoax. Then the third great opportunity, folks, in January, this article is coming out in Vanity Fair where showing that the neocons, the PNAC neocons, Richard Perle, Ken Edelman, and several others are now turning doing a 180 on Iraq and the whole Bush, you know, war strategy in Iraq. I hope you've seen this. This has been covered by Keith Olbermann and many others, the Sunday talk shows. Anyway, when that article comes out, or even now, we can start saying, wait a minute, these same neocons are part of the Project for a New American Century that call for a new Pearl Harbor. And we have a new opportunity to highlight that agenda in the phrase, you know, a military transformation called for the American people would not
some catastrophic event like
a new Pearl Harbor. This is a great opportunity for us. We have to seize that.
Absolutely. We have to keep hounding these people. We can't give them a moment's rest. We have to stay in their faces.
Neither can we give them a moment's rest. But I think, you know, for me, I reach out to people of all walks of life, of all, you know, ideologic foundations, whether they're Muslim, whether they're Jewish, whether they're Christian, whether they're atheist. And look, this is the greatest lie ever sold.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, you might want to look at the, if you don't know, the Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance for 9/11.
I do very well. It's
okay.
Awesome.
I'm glad you liked it. Yeah,
I love it.
That's our mission, Interfaith 9/11 Truth Outreach, and we're moving right along.
Well, I wish you all the best, and Les, you keep going what you're going.
Will do. No, can't quit now. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Deborah. Take care. We have another caller on the line. It's Wally calling in from Austin, Texas. You still with us, Wally?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, welcome. How are you doing?
Good evening, Kevin. How y'all doing?
Well, if you would mind, just for 10 seconds, I just want to pick up on something in terms of these three opportunities that I just spoke of as action points that we can take. Folks, the Citizens Counter Coup is a website at 3c.911truth.org. Please take 10, 12 minutes to read through this and see our action page, especially our talking points, because we're going to run with these initiatives. And also, if you sign up for the monthly reminder, you can check off a little box for what's called Blogger Brigade or e-activism. We have what's called Blogger Brigade so that all of you who are out there participating online doing e-activism, we have our own 9/11 Truth news wires. Please look into that. Go ahead, Wally.
That's the Blogger Brigade at 911blogger.com and the 3c.911truth.org. Okay, we'll be back with Les and wrapping it up and taking more calls, talking to Wally in just a bit. We're going to get back into Truth Jihad Radio real fast here. This is Kevin Barrett, your host. I'm talking with Les Jamison of New York 911truth.org and the 3C campaign at 3c.911truth.org. We were just talking with Wally from Austin, Texas. We're going to try to take these calls real fast. We have a couple more callers lined up. So, Wally, go ahead and fill us in.
Okay, great. You're just on the perfect note that I wanted to chime in on. Fast. When you're talking to people about these globalists and 9/11 and Ruby Ridge and Waco, and and Oklahoma City, the less that you can say, I found, the better. What I like to do is give them a real inexpensive by-the-thousand business card with my favorite websites on there, Infowars.com, FreezingPlant.com. And as well as individuals that are cornerstones in our government, like Ron Paul's website, like Cynthia McKinney's website, and just simply say, basically say, it is an absolute that one in three believe that the government did the trade towers, took the trade towers down. They one in three believe that And here is some information that's very germane to what I just said, that gets the point across. Standing there and talking to them and mentioning Buzzy Krongard was trading short and on the airline stocks and all the gold that disappeared in the Twain Towers, it's a waste of time. And just like this guy, Troy, that calls in from Virginia to all the different talk hosts.
That's
Troy
the Troll. Yeah.
He hassles all of them. And you ask him to come spring Google a 9/11 Truth Movement, that guy will do good to giggle. Certain individuals are a total waste of time to move on, so we can make it not one in three. We can make it two in three.
Wally, I think you're absolutely right.
It's going there. Don't beat yourself up. Another good thing I've done is give away DVDs. Another thing I've given away was VHS tapes. But the most effective thing that's going to reach these bright people is just a simple little business card. It's cheap. It's quick. It's there. And if that person's reachable, they certainly can read.
You're absolutely right, Wally. Yeah.
I don't want to take any more time, but get somebody else on there.
Sure.
Okay, well, thanks, Wally. You're right. Business cards are great. So are deception dollars. Go to deceptiondollar.com. That's maybe the best political leaflet ever invented. And, hey, we have somebody on the line now that I'm really anxious to talk to. Mike from Kentucky. Is this the Mike I think it is? Hello, Mike. Are you there?
Yeah, I guess this is the same Mike you're thinking of, but there's a couple of them.
He didn't just get out of incarceration?
No, not, well.
Then you're not, they're not the one I was thinking of.
Literally, no.
Literally.
Different Mike.
Okay, well, how you doing, Mike?
Different Mike.
Okay.
Not yet, anyway. They haven't got a hold of me yet. anyway, thought that they might, I don't know how many of the myriad of federal regulations I might have violated or policies today just getting out of bed, but...
You better say it best. Say it best.
Have you sent an invitation to Cardinal Ratzinger to join Muchka since he bowed down at a Muslim mosque?
Well, I think it's going to be a long time before he bows down before Muchka. So if he wants to take off that big old Pope hat and bow down to Muchka, that'd be fine with me. If you have an in with him, give him my phone number. And you can email me at kevin@muchka.com. That's kevin@mujca.com. Gary from Tennessee has some information from me, so just send it on, kevin@mujca.com. And don't forget to check out Les Jamison at New York 9/11 Truth and 3C.911truth.org. We'll be back next week with another great guest. Until then, thanks for listening, and thanks, Les, for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
All right, take care, everybody.